Hi, this is Gillian from Rest Reflections. Welcome to this episode of At Work, a fortnightly podcast on all things inequality, injustice, and oppression in the workplace. As I hope you know, we always invite questions, queries, dilemma. So please feel free to get in touch. If you would like us to dedicate some attention to a particular question. And on this note, today's episode is about a query that we have received. In fact, it was more than a query. I'd say that it was a discussion that we have been having on and off in the community meetings, and actually that has also featured in other spaces outside of Race Reflections. And I guess what prompted this line of interrogation was a piece of research, I believe, which was published late last year and which showed that when it came to returning to the workplace post-lockdown, there were some marked differences across racial groups. With Black groups, and I think Black women in particular, being more resistant, being more hesitant, being more perhaps wary about returning in the workplace. Now, there is various ways that we can tackle this question, but I'd like to maybe focus on authenticity. And it is really, how authentic can we be when we are racialized as other? And it is essentially the way that this query was posed to us. And so let's think about that for a little while. I'm not going to take too much of a scientific route or a scholarly route to define authenticity. For the purpose of the podcast, let's just say that we mean by authentic the ability to feel that we can be ourselves, that we can come to the workplace without having to hide too much of our values, too much of our identities, too much of our history in order to be accepted, in order to fit in. So let's just accept that as a working definition of authenticity. So if we make the link with that particular study, which found that Black people, Black employees were more resistant to returning to the workplace post-COVID, how can we use this idea of authenticity? How can we use this idea of realness and have experienced the workplace to make sense of that finding? First of all, let me just say that it is not unusual for marginalized employees to feel that they have to conceal aspects of their identity. And there are various theories that exist to help us make sense of what that might be, whether we're talking about so-called minority stress, whether we're talking about a stigmatized identity, the cost of stigma, whether we are talking about even internalized oppression. So there's loads of concepts, there's loads of tools that we can use to try and understand that. But for people who are not familiar with the literature, I do want to stress, lest we try to pathologize particular employees or particular groups of people, that this experience is very common, where people who are marginalized or who are perhaps underrepresented, you know, I don't really like that expression, but perhaps people will find themselves numerically in the minority, in particular context, would be more aware of them standing out and will be perhaps more aware of their quote-unquote difference. And I say quote-unquote difference because, of course, difference is not an attribute or a characteristic that one entity possessed that is inherent, if you like, to one individual or one group of people. It's relational, so it exists between people. But we tend to see as different people who are minoritized. And in our context, we're focusing on racialized identities. So it's a common experience, and it might manifest in people of color, employees of color, being resistant to form a relationship outside of what is the bare minimum, perhaps just doing what they have to do and getting out of the workplace, perhaps not being as social as their white or perhaps even brown counterpart, perhaps even being reluctant to take space and to speak out. And sometimes that can create difficulties. So, for example, I've come across a number of employees, particularly Black women employees in position of leadership, who have been charged with being antisocial, not being a team player, not getting on with the rest of the team. And so that's not to say that, you know, sometimes there might well be some personality differences in terms of how people negotiate interpersonal contact and relationship. But often those considerations are not made taking into consideration the totality of the context. So what it is like to form relationship when one might be the only Black employee, for example. What is it like to form relationship in a particular context when one feels that they cannot be authentic, for fear of being excluded or of being misevaluated or evaluated negatively? So there is a burden on those who carry, I would say, the difference that is not often explored when it comes to making those assessments in terms of interpersonal and leadership skills. Now, I remember maybe 10, 11 years ago, professional context, where I had been told, so I'm talking here from my lived experience, where I had been told that I should make more effort to build relationship within my team. And so that was part of a formal assessment. But a context where the comment had been made, where a context where I was exposed frequently to racist comments, just to put it bluntly, where there was a lot of dog whistling around foreigners, around immigration, there were comments made around my accent. And so in that context, I was expected to form relationship without attempting to address what was essentially a relational barrier. Now, it might well be that some employees are better able to brush off this kind of, I would say, everyday normalized violence bordering on racial harassment, actually. But the expectation that we should do so is institutional racism, and the expectation that we should do so forces employees of color and other marginalized employees to relate in a way that is inauthentic. As I say often, there's always going to be a degree of assimilation that is required for, you know, a particular entity, a person that gets into a workplace. So there's going to be a bit of give and take, or there should be some give and take, not just some take from the organization when it comes to that institutional culture. The problem is that often consideration around how the culture might be experienced and indeed experienced as violence to particular employees is not taken into consideration. And so when it comes to thinking around the cost of being inauthentic. And some of you might well be thinking, well, in the grand scheme or thing, what is really the big deal when it comes to, you know, putting a mask, when it comes to pretending to be someone that you're not, when it comes to hiding part of your identity? Well, let me tell you that there is a fairly heavy cost, actually. There's a cost in terms of employees' well-being. So we're thinking here in relation to issues to do with anxiety, issues to do with stress, issues to do with even with high blood pressure. And I think there's even a little bit of research that is accumulating, showing the cost of assimilative pressure when it comes to gastro health. So we're talking about things like ulcers. That bit of research here showing that actually there is a cost. But even if there wasn't a physical or a psychological cost, the question would be, is it an ethical expectation to place on employees of color? As we try to give you something to think about in At Work, you know that we like to gear the conversation towards a possible solution, resolution, something that might unlock some of the negative or adverse effect of essentially working in an environment where one has to constantly wear a mask. Let's put it that way. So the first issue, of course, is safety. We need to think very carefully as to whether it is sufficiently safe for employees to bring themselves or to bring more of themselves within a particular context. So, for example, cultures where people have all gone to the same university, sometimes even the same college within the university, believe it or not, it does happen. That exclude particular experiences, that exclude, of course, particular people. And it means that people who don't fit in with that history are not likely to want to speak out about where they come from, because they don't want to stand out. They don't want to be the only person out. So obviously, safety is going to be a function of how, let's say, varied the range of background is fundamentally. So there's something about representation and safety, undoubtedly. Safety is also how people are supported to hold, to verbalize alternative views, to share opinion that disrupt the status quo within the organization. So we can link that to issues of psychological safety. And essentially, psychological safety is the notion that it is sufficiently safe to challenge and to think differently and to bring, therefore, alternative ways of conceptualizing certain problem, for example, or presenting alternative solution to particular problems. So when it comes to psychological safety, we know that when people feel safe, that they can take risk, that they can challenge the culture, that they can bring opinions that are not align perhaps with the rest of the team, that this is likely to correlate with people feeling that they can be a bit more themselves and there's not going to be a high risk or high cost to bring in ourselves to work. And the last thing I would say is the more micro communication, we might say that communicate to employees of color that their difference, again, quote unquote, is othered, is inferior, is not welcome, is a problem to the organization. So to come back to my lived experience, I was talking about comments about migrants, particularly in relation to London in that particular context. You know, people saying that they didn't want to go to London because there were just too many migrants or too many black and brown people. Now, that is not really subtle, but if it's not deemed discriminatory and clearly wasn't deemed discriminatory or it was deemed discriminatory and it wasn't tackled, in any event, whether it is deemed discriminatory and it is not tackled or it is not recognized as discriminatory, the meta message that is communicated to the employees of color is, well, we do not welcome difference. We have a hostile view that concern migrants. We essentially have unchecked racism. And so if that is common, and in my experience, it is common, I'd say fairly common, that comments of that nature are made without being tackled, then we can't really expect, I'm afraid, employees of color to feel comfortable and to feel at home and to feel that they can be themselves. And so to go back to the study that had identified that particular groups of employees were more unwilling to return to the workplace in person, that tells us that those particular employees did not experience the workplace as safe, as inclusive, as welcoming, and a place where they could form authentic relationship. So rather than, again, placing the disturbance, the pathology, the dysfunction on those employees, and I'm not suggesting that actually sometimes employees of color might need some support to navigate particularly challenging organization via coaching, via training, via mentoring. They are not exempt from having developmental needs. Absolutely not. But what I am saying is that we do have to be very careful about not locating the problem in them exclusively, as I said earlier in the podcast. That would, to me, amount to institutional racism. So that is it. A little bit of musing on authenticity, on exclusion, on marginalization, on racism, and some things that we take for granted, actually, when it comes to experiencing the workplace. So let us know, can you be yourself at work? Does it matter? Does it not matter? Have I been ranting, not giving anything of substance? I hope not, but please give me some feedback. And yes, that is all for that episode. As always, thank you very much for listening. And until next time, please take care.